You're listening to Family Feud, part of the Paris Style podcast family. They might not be brother and sister, but they sure do fight like they are. Here's your hosts, Keely Yore and Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to the Family Feud podcast. This is Keely Yore here with Shotgun Spratling. We're a little tired. It's a travel week, and we're heading into the Notre Dame game.
Well, you can be tired. I got my caffeine this morning. I'm ready to go. Let's go.
Let's go. We said the last Family Feud that USC just needed a win. If it was ugly, it was okay, because that's how important the Utah game was. And they got a win. It was slightly ugly, but they got a win.
They got a win. You know, it's very important to get that win against Utah, because that's the Pac-12 South. You know, they kind of control their own destiny still. They control their own destiny in the national picture as well still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this game this week against Notre Dame will be huge in that. You know, that's going to play in big because Notre Dame is ranked. Notre Dame's played pretty well this season. Much different than last year, kind of a 180 reverse course on them. Brian Kelly's got the team playing well, going in the right direction. They have a tough slate coming up to end the season, so it's going to be important for them in this game. They've basically had 2 weeks off. You know, they're not in class this week. They had a bye week last week, so Notre Dame's going to be prepared. You know, they're probably going to be the unique trick plays. This is the time you see them a lot of times after a bye week, so USC may use them. That they didn't have a bye week this year.
Yeah, so not only can they add in trick plays, they got guys healed up.
Yeah, that's important.
They're getting the quarterback back. They're getting their three running backs had little ankle things, and they're healthy. Little ankle things. That's what I'm going to call them. Hey, do you want to hear some fun facts about the Notre Dame game?
Sure.
This is the first time both teams have been ranked since 2009.
Okay.
Our own Dan Weber said that this is the first time USC doesn't have an interim head coach heading to Notre Dame since 2011.
That helps.
And on Saturday, there will be 8 players with the last name Jones playing. Technically 9, but a guy got his name changed, so.
Got his name changed? He added a name in?
No, he took the Jones out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of Jones, and then still the most interesting name will just be St. Brown.
How do you say the first name?
Osiris. Osiris is at Stanford. There's too many of them. Equanimeous. Equanimeous St. Brown, the wide receiver, the oldest of the three brothers, the middle brother Osiris, who's at Stanford, and then the youngest brother, the number one wide receiver recruit in the nation, Amon-Ra, who could be looking at USC. And if that were to happen, if Amon-Ra were to come to USC, then you would see the three brothers each get to play each other, which might be actually a selling point for USC because USC plays Stanford every year, USC plays Notre Dame, Notre Dame plays Stanford as well, so each of the brothers will get to play each other. That would be kind of a cool little thing if that were to happen. But this, who USC has to be concerned about this week is Equanimeous, who was, I believe, their leading receiver last year against USC. Had a couple nice catches in the rain game. So he's one of their biggest threats on the outside. But Notre Dame's going to be running the ball, and USC's got to stop the run first.
Well, also, Brandon Wimbush, their quarterback, is probably the first dual threat that USC's truly seeing this season.
Yeah, and the fact that he is healthy now, because he missed their last game, so he's had 3 weeks off. You kind of wonder, you brought it up in the Facebook Live, is does that lead to rustiness, or does that lead to, okay, he's healthy and he's sharp? I think, you know, with quarterbacks, maybe a drive where you can be too amped up, or you can be a little bit rusty. You saw that with Sam Darnold in the Penn State game. You know, it was just a little bit too hyped up, overthrew a couple passes. But I don't think you see the same type of rust because you don't have to be quite as fine as maybe a baseball pitcher. When a pitcher has to, like Alex Wood for the Dodgers, is going to be pitching for the first time in like a month, it feels like, for them in their game 4. So you see with pitchers, you know, they have it a long time off. They're used to this routine of playing pitching every 5 days or whatever. When there's a long time off, usually there can be a little bit of erraticness. I don't know that you'll see that necessarily with Wimbush because quarterbacks, you have a little bit bigger window that you can hit.
It's also worth noting that Notre Dame's getting Kevin Steverson back. He was their third leading wide receiver last year. He was suspended. He's coming back. He can be a deep threat, and Notre Dame's passing game is a little eh. So maybe in my mind, it's kind of a comparison to having like a Steven Mitchell back. I think, you know, it kind of helps out your game. So should be interesting to watch out for.
Yeah, USC will probably load the box. If they can stop the run, then they can control the Notre Dame offense, I think. But it will come down to the DBs, you know, making some plays. That's been something that's been an issue, making some plays on the outside. So we'll talk about that, obviously, a little bit later. But
Maybe we
should get into our stock up, stock down section.
Who you got?
I'm going to start stock up with Ronald Jones II. You know, they had a really nice game, you know, especially in the fourth quarter running the ball. But also, you know, he's kind of a workhorse for the offense. You know, he played a season-high 64 offensive plays. That's 15 more than he had played in any game previous in the season. They basically relied on him. The backups played a combined 17 plays, and, you know, that was why Malapai didn't play until the second half, and he got 12 snaps, so a lot of that came in the second half there. So I thought Ronald Jones had a really nice game, except for, you know, getting hit right between the eyes with a pass, and then
it
falling to the ground.
I know that's horrible, but I didn't realize it live watching the game, but during my replay, I just loved watching it. I don't know how that happened.
Literally hit him.
Bonk.
As I texted you when you were laughing at him.
He admitted to me after the game. He was like, yeah, that was a bad.
Yeah, so you texted me last night, and I texted you that if he didn't wear a visor, if Sam Darnold would have thrown a little bit harder, that might have just stuck in his face mask. And then he could just take off running, didn't have to secure the ball or anything.
That's an interesting strategy, for sure.
I've never seen that happen, but it would be interesting to see it.
That'd be cool. Also worth noting, I don't think a lot of people knew, on the drive that he had the Ross Bowers-esque flipping touchdown, he was gimpy. That's why you saw Vi came in. But he came in and finished the drive, and so that's why Helton said on Sunday that he's a little, he's not 100%. On Tuesday, he was held a little bit. So.
Yeah, and he finished it in a strong fashion.
He definitely did.
Flip, flip, who they want? Flip, flip.
He's been singing that before you even started recording, so a little behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I have the wide receivers as a whole. I thought they stepped up big. I think they saved Darnold a lot on a lot of throws. You have Pittman and Fowler with leaping catches that extend drives. Darnold had a kind of a problem of overthrowing receivers, so a lot of those, Stephen Mitchell coming back was important. I thought he played a good game. Tyler Vaughn's the one-handed catch on fourth down. Deontay made a ton of grabs that saved Darnold. I mentioned Stephen Mitchell, but he had a grab that just, I don't know how it didn't drop on the ground. It was just, I thought overall, they definitely stepped up.
Yeah, they caught some balls away from the chest area. You know, the main target for a quarterback is to throw it right to the chest, try to hit in the numbers. Obviously, not always the easiest thing to do, and some guys made plays behind them. Some guys made plays up in the air. I mean, Sam got a couple of receivers hit pretty hard. I mean, Deontay Burnett on the third down, you know, kind of got crushed by the safety, Pittman as well. And both those guys held on the ball, and that's big time. You know, and there were some nice plays made by a lot of different guys, which is something we hadn't seen so far this season. So that was really good to see. And I think that's something that can give Sam Darnold some confidence. That's something
I was about to say is that, like, those wide receivers making those plays, maybe they may not have made them earlier in the season. You give Darnold that confidence of, okay, I can keep going. I'm not making mistakes. In a game where he did make mistakes, how important was those wide receivers to help him from stop making more mistakes?
I got to stock up Sam Darnold confidence because
I
think, you know, that definitely, you know, that's the first time, that's half, the second half is the first time we've kind of seen Sam get out of the pocket, make some throws, just do some different things that he was so good at last season. And the accuracy still wasn't there. You know, that was kind of the difference maker last year, I thought, is the fact that he could throw on the run and throw some darts that were so accurate, but his receivers helped him out. And I think that's only going to allow him to think, hey, I can throw the ball as long as I get it near him. They're going to make the plays similar to Darius Rogers and Juju Smith last year. The fact that, you know, he could throw some balls up that might be 50-50 balls or even might be intercepted and Darius Rogers would steal it away. This game, you know, he was fortunate to get away with a very bad throw early in the game that the DB just dropped basically.
Yeah.
And then Stephen Mitchell almost had a bounce, a deflected pass for a catch there. But, you know, in that second half, his play just got better and better. They made those three long drives, three of the best all season. And I think that, you know, I said last week, I thought this was a make or break game, that they could definitely build momentum off of it. They've got a great opportunity. That second half allows them, you know, they're sky high, you know, coming off that second half. If they continue with that play against Notre Dame, they could easily walk in there and beat up on Notre Dame, and you see this team just get better and better as the season progresses. The first half was awful. You know, just turning the ball over, bad mistakes turning the ball over. But I think that they have an opportunity to build off last week, and, you know, that's what they needed in that game. They needed a win, and they needed some momentum. And they've got both of those coming off that game.
I'm curious how much of this game is a turning point, just in the sense that I thought Darnold had a really good practice on Tuesday. He seemed more like the Darnold we saw last year, in the sense that he kind of was a little bit more loose. His accuracy was good. His timing was good. It just looked like how you expect USC's offense to look in practice. So that carryover, whether that's that stays to the Notre Dame game, but I think it definitely had a good impact on him.
I talk about it all the time when I'm covering college baseball. These are still 18 to 21-year-olds.
Yes, that's a great point.
So emotions play a big part on it. You know, motivation plays a big part on it. And if you're struggling, you know, Sam Darnold, all the expectations coming into the year, all the hype, and he hasn't been able to perform to what he's capable of, you know, one half of strong football can be a monumental change for a player. You know, the difference in confidence, you know, is huge. You know, I think I talked about it last week on my stock up that I thought Isaiah Langley had regained his confidence that he admitted that he lost last year. I think maybe you're seeing a little bit of that with Iman Marshall. And Sam Darnold, you know, he wasn't playing to his capabilities. I think he lost a little bit of his confidence. So I think he has a great opportunity to build on that. And I think, you know, I think maybe we'll start seeing the Sam Darnold that we kind of expected. It's quite possible, you know, especially if you know, something goes right early in that game against Notre Dame, you know, maybe it's a tip ball or something that the receiver catches and you're like, okay, this is going to work out now. And then he just builds off of it and has a really good game. I could see that happening very easily.
Yeah. I also had, in that same vein, team morale. If you look at towards the end when they are realizing that they're winning the game, they're going to win the game. Everyone is just so invested and so pumped up. And Ronald Jones told me that guys were pissed in the locker room in the second half. It was really like a player leadership standpoint. At halftime. Did I not say that? Sorry. They're pissed at halftime. And it was players who stood up and were like, this is our season. We need to do this. Clay Helton said that the players chose to define the rest of the season by how they played in the second half. And I think it showed that, hey, okay, even if we're down, even if we're not playing very well, we can come back and we can do this. I feel like I've said this before with other games, and then they go out and play the next game kind of poorly. So I don't know if I necessarily want to buy into this point that I'm making right now. But I think this could be a good turning point for USC.
You think it could be a good turning point?
Keyword think.
I mean, like I just said, you know, they have the opportunity to build on the momentum. Do they take advantage of that opportunity? That's up to them. And, you know, a lot of times it takes the players to, you know, last year they said after the Utah game there was a players-only meeting. You know, maybe there needed to be one this week to say, hey, look what we can do. Yeah. We showed how good we can be in that second half. We need to come out and do that every game. And maybe that message hasn't gone across. I mean, a coaching staff and head coach can do only so much.
Yeah.
And I know everyone wants to blame the coaches for everything that goes wrong, and they're the ones that are getting paid, so they're the ones that get blamed. However, you can say something so many times, but until a player buys in or until a group realizes what it is capable of, and that's half a battle sometimes with 18 to 21-year-old, realizing what you're capable of. And once you realize that, then, you know, the sky can be the limit. You can play up to your potential fully versus I don't think they have so far in the season, and now they have an opportunity and a big game to showcase it, that they're ready to, you know, this is another chance to show, hey, we're a national power. We're a team to be feared this season. We may have lost a game, but we're clicking on all cylinders, and they could show that this Saturday.
In the big scheme of things, how important is this game, Notre Dame game?
I mean, I said last week that it was a make-or-break game, and I think it has the opportunity to turn out that way because if they build on the momentum. But this game's huge, you know, because of the national implications.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to be in that playoff, you have to show something this game. And especially if they show something – you know, if they don't just win, if they do more than win, if they show, wow, USC, like, wow, that's the team that we thought that we were going to get before the season. You see the national analysts, you know, on a college football countdown or whatever at the end of the night, college football final, you know, they're like, my helmet sticker today goes to the entire USC team because they came out and showed what we expected. That's quite possible that they could do.
Yeah.
You know, they have an opportunity, and that's going to only – that, you know, it's going to be a national televised game. It's at Notre Dame, so there's going to be interest. It's one of the big games of the weekend. You know, there's going to be a ton of eyes on that game. And because it's being played on the East Coast at 7:30 Eastern time, it's the primetime game.
Has East Coast interest.
Yeah, it's going to have that East Coast interest. And, you know, there's going to be national media that are paying attention. And if USC goes out and plays their capability, then they grab attention and show, you know, this is a team to be feared, and they could easily see themselves bump up in the polls really quickly off a big win.
It's one of those games that, because all the reasons you just listed of how many people are interested in it, people can kind of blow it out of proportion. Say USC just comes out and, like, looks great on all three phases and just blows out Notre Dame, then you can start to hear the hype. You know, it's one of those things that it maybe is not really necessarily granted for this team, but if that happens, then that's the weird media thing that starts to happen. So it'll be interesting how that kind of plays out.
And you saw that a little bit after the Stanford game, as USC played really well and, you know, played well in all three facets there. And then Texas game was similar. They had an opportunity. You know, if they could have blown out Texas, then, you know, they bump up to, you know, inside, maybe even move up to 3 or 2 in that because they were fourth then. Instead, they struggle. They moved down, I believe, after the Texas game. So, you know, those big moments, that's what you live for as a player and a coach. And, you know, those are the opportunities to kind of, you know, make your mark on a season. So they'll have a chance this weekend to do that.
Mm-hmm. Who you got?
I got tight ends. Stock up for the entire tight end group. You know, getting Daniel Amorebebe back is huge.
Yep.
You know, they just rack up yardage when he's on the field. I mean, the offense is averaging 11.2 yards when he's been on the field this season for, you know, a very small sample size of 30 plays. But then Tyler Petit has a monster game, probably the best game of his career. I mean, 52-yard touchdown catch. You know, and then Josh Fallow has two big catches. Josh Fallow was on the field for 4 offensive plays. He had a touchdown and I think like a 20-yard catch. So that is quite efficient right there. That is super efficient.
I talked to him this week and I was like, you have 3 receptions on your career and 2 of them are touchdowns. And he's like, it's pretty cool, right?
And the other one was a big, you know, a big catch mm-hmm. as well for a big third down conversion, I believe.
He's tall and athletic. I don't think you realize how tall he is unless you really get up close to him. And I was like, wow, you're tall.
See, I think he can do some of the things that, you know, the offense has been missing without Daniel Amorebebe over the middle. Mm-hmm. Now, I think he's still very green, but I think, you know, once he gets, you know, put on a little weight so he can block a little bit better on the edge, I think as his career progresses at USC, I think he can do a lot of the things that Daniel Amorebebe does over the middle and be that offensive weapon in the middle of the field that can be a danger to defenses because he can catch the ball and get open. He can, you know, create some space by himself.
It was kind of sad. I thought it was a podium game for Petit, but Darnold came for the offensive representative, if you will, and then we couldn't even find him after the game. I was like, this is your moment to bask in the sunlight. What are you doing, Petit? I don't know. He also was pretty banged up, so maybe he just wanted to get out of there. Understandable.
Or maybe he just wanted to go celebrate the win.
That too.
He is still an 18 to 21 year old.
That is a great point.
But he talked yesterday, and you know, I saw some people that talked to him, so I'm assuming he probably talked for like 22 minutes. Because
him and Daniel basically had a
dual scrum,
a monologue of it was both of them separate, kind of coming in and out of their scrums. Daniel put his arm around Petit at one point. It was a whole thing.
Interesting. I mean, that just shows the tightness of the tight ends.
This is kind of a sad stock up. I'm Josh Fatu. I thought he played well. But of course, Josh Fatu. Was in a car accident over the weekend, I believe. It wasn't his fault, multi-car accident. He's going through concussion protocol. They don't know if he'll be ready for Saturday. My guess is that he's not. But he had a season high, 7 tackles, 2 tackles for loss. He was making key stops, and I thought he got in the backfield. Although I thought USC's D-line was kind of hit or miss that game. If I want to transition, I thought Zach Moss played really well. He's on my stock up for all the Utah listeners of Family Feud. USC could not tackle him. And granted, that was also on USC for just not tackling well, but I thought he played very, very well.
Yeah, I was really impressed by Zach Moss when I rewatched the game. And like you said, Josh Fatu had a sack in that game as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, he's been playing some really good football and people kind of not noticed him because you're nose tackle, you don't make a ton of tackles and stuff, but he's been really stout in there and not being pushed around, like which was something that happened last year when he would sub in. You know, sometimes you get pushed around. So
he actually is second for tackles for loss on the team. First is Christian Richter. How crazy is that?
I mean, that just shows how good he's been at getting penetration, mm-hmm. and especially on some of the plays. And, you know, it's kind of disappointing that he's going to be missing this game potentially because of, you know, he's in concussion protocol. And that's going to be a big loss potentially for USC because, coupled with that, Kenny Bigelow, we finally found out that he is going to step away from playing and going to join the coaching staff kind of as a player coach type of thing. To begin his career as a coach, which is what he wants to do after not getting a bunch of playing time, kind of getting jumped by Brandon Peely. So now it comes down to it's going to be Brandon Peely there, and then there's a big question mark behind him. If Brandon Peely starts and Fatu's not available, like we kind of don't think he's going to be, you know, what do they do? And, you know, that I talked about this a little bit earlier on the Facebook Live, but if Porter Gustin is back, do you then slide Christian Rector in and play him beside Rasheem Green and then kind of sub in Brandon Peely when you think it's going to be runs?
But we don't actually think Porter will be back for Notre Dame.
I don't really know.
I don't
I mean, he had an MRI. He was supposed to get an MRI and CT scan yesterday to determine.
Yeah, full disclosure, we're recording this on a Wednesday before practice. Yeah. So we will apparently get some notice on Porter Gustin's status later today.
Hopefully.
Keyword, hopefully.
That's another guy. I thought Christian Rector was another stock up. I mean, two more sacks. I think he's leading the Pac-12. You know, he was on the Associated Press's second team All-American midseason team. So from a guy that was playing only on third downs to begin the season, not too bad.
Yeah, that's a great point. Cam Smith against Utah. Cam has four interceptions, all against Utah. Of course, one against Utah on Saturday. I was very surprised that he actually intercepted that ball because he kind of just like grabbed it. You can't see what I'm doing right now, but it was pretty funny to watch. But this is a thing that I'm impressed with by the defense overall. There's been multiple times where either the linebackers or basically the front seven, they're blitzing and they realize that they're not going to get to the quarterback in enough time. And so they stop their blitz and then they just time it and jump for the ball. They've done that multiple times, and it's the self-awareness to know and the play awareness to know, okay, I'm not going to get to the quarterback in time, and just like, okay, I'll just leap and time it to the throw. It's impressive.
Yeah, they've done a really good job of reading the quarterback's eyes. That's what he did on that play. They showed it behind the, you know, kind of behind the defense look, and you see him rushing, and he's kind of sizing up the blocker, and then he takes a glance and sees that the quarterback's about to throw, and he's like, okay, I'll just wait here. And he's looking at me. He's basically looking through me to the receiver. He jumps up and kind of smothers it against his chest. The one thing he did in this game that he didn't do against Utah previously, made a tackle. When he had three interceptions, according to the ESPN game log I just looked up, he had zero tackles in that game. This game he had a whopping 16 tackles, the most by a USC player since, I think, 2001, Troy Polamalu. Anytime you can get in the same conversation with Troy Polamalu is good.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. So he had a big game, you know, tackling, also the interception. So now he has, in two games against Utah at home, he's got 16 tackles and four interceptions. That's not bad for a two-game stretch. Yeah. That he got 16 tackles in the one game is even more impressive.
Not too shabby. I also have Jack Jones. He had, like, almost three interceptions that game. It was so funny. You couldn't see on the broadcast, but every time he almost intercepted it, the first one especially, he pointed directly at Troy Williams, and he was like, I'm this close. He made, like, the little fingers, I'm this close, I got you, and did the little fingers. It was pretty good. It was one of Jack Jones' best, like, taunting moments.
Not surprising to see Jack Jones do that.
Yeah, that wasn't my heard in the sidelines, but I bumped it up.
I wonder if they have a relationship at all, you know, because Troy Williams played at Narbonne, but, you know, he's a couple years older than Jack Jones, so they may or may not have a relationship there. So
interesting.
I also have Tyler Vaughn. You know, the great fourth down catch. And then also, you know, just the fact that he's being used all the time now. He's the number one receiver now. There's no question about that. He played every offensive snap except for one. One random snap he did not play because they had Velus Jones on the field.
Interesting.
But he played every other offensive snap, and the other receivers split the rest of the time. So it was now Steven Mitchell was splitting time. Well, interestingly, really interesting that to start the game, Deontay Burnett did not start.
Really?
Because instead of Deontay Burnett, it was Tyler Vaughn, Steven Mitchell, and Michael Pittman. Those were the three starters for the three receivers for the first three plays. And then Burnett comes in the game and he plays, you know, his regular amount of time the rest of the time.
Oh, I didn't remember that. But Deontay didn't practice that whole week. I think he was more banged up than you thought. It was like vet rest. He was actually kind of hurt.
He still played 63 of 83 offensive snaps.
He's a gamer.
Or 63 of 80, you know, actual snaps, not counting the three. So he didn't play 17 plays. So why were three of them or four of them the first four plays? That's just kind of strange to me. He didn't play the first four plays, and then he came in and he played, you know, basically a normal amount. But besides that, it was Steven Mitchell and Michael Pittman basically rotating after that first drive. Those were the two guys splitting the other side, and Tyler Vaughn's was by himself. So his stock is definitely up, you know, besides the actual catches and what. Well, not only the one-handed catch, the catch that was most impressive to me probably taking away the fact that the one-handed catch was on fourth down and he got the first down. The other catch that really impressed me was the sideline. You know, they're in their own end zone. They're on the 2-yard line. Sam Darnold rolls to his left. Sam Darnold's about to take a hit. He throws the ball. It's a little wide of Tyler Vaughn's. Catches it with the fingertips. Keeps both feet, an NFL catch, keeps both feet on the ground.
Yeah.
And then falls out of bounds. That's just a tremendous concentration and, you know, helping Sam Darnold out, you know, to make a play there. They get him out of the end zone, and then they go on and have a nice drive on that one.
Mm-hmm. I have honorable mention stock up.
What? What is this?
Because I'm not necessarily – they had – meaning that they had other negative plays that kind of made their stock neutral.
So how
it's stock neutral.
Whatever, go for it.
There's massive eye rolls going on if you can't see. I had Chris Hawkins, Chris Brown, Tolovadon, and Josh Wallow. So
we get a quick not to elaborate on it, but just a quick reasoning.
Chris Hawkins had some big stops, some big hits. I think he's been a good leader on the defense, but he's kind of quiet in that sense, so people don't really give him kind of credit. So he should credit Chris Hawkins. And then I thought Chris Brown and Tolovadon played well, especially towards the end. They were pulling late when it was, like, tiring. So I thought they did a good job of that. And Josh Follow, like we mentioned.
Yeah, Mr. Efficient. Mm-hmm. Chris Brown had a really nice game, it looked like, from rewatching the game.
Yeah.
What about stock down? Who's on the down list?
I have a concept on the down list.
Go for it.
Tackling, which we kind of already mentioned, but I thought this was the worst tackling game that USC played all season.
It was a concept for them at times in that first half. It was just a concept, not an actual thing, just a concept. A
figment of their imagination.
Yeah, this tackling thing, that sounds like something we should do.
I don't have enough patience, but if I did, I would have counted all the missed tackles because it was ridiculous. You couldn't even see it as much on the broadcast as you could see it from my view. But they were just, it almost looked like they were expecting Zach Moss, like, once contact was made, just to be like, oh, okay, heading down now, you know? Like, it was just ridiculous.
Oh, you're in the elevator too? I'll just head down.
They were just like, it was almost like they were, like, it was practice, and it was, this is, I don't want to start the wheel about full contact practice, but it kind of looked like.
As you circle your finger, like, there's an alarm going, woo, woo!
It's actually the umpire home run signal, but it kind of looked like thud, you know, when they can't really take him to the ground. And,
good point.
You know, I mean, how much of that, if you're doing that every practice, you play like you practice. It kind of looked like that a little bit. Like, they were expecting him to, like, okay, contact, go down. And obviously, Zach Moss was like, nah, I ain't doing that.
Nah, bruh.
No. So, yeah. From a tackling standpoint, it was the defense's worst game.
Yeah, worst game. Western Michigan was
from
pretty bad.
From a tackling.
Western Michigan was pretty bad.
But against Zach Moss, it was just so blatant.
True. You know, the tackling.
Also, I'm going to give that a pass since it was the first game of the season, and it was hot. Sweaty bodies, maybe? I don't know. No.
The sweaty bodies theory. Interesting.
Like the body blow theory. It's a cousin.
I got stuck down. I got Jalen Green. Jalen Green did play one snap, which was the onside kick recovery. Now, maybe he's not healthy enough to be going full blow as a receiver. That's still a possibility. So I don't want to take that potential away. But it looks like he's been passed up in the receiver grouping. If he was healthy enough to play on the onside recovery, then he should have been at least healthy enough to play a couple snaps on offense, you would think. But he did not. He played no offensive snaps. He did not. Josh and Mortebebe did not. And Trayvon Sidney did not play. They were DMPs, the last two. So the receiver group kind of tightened up, and that was something we were really interested in.
Yeah, I was about to say, we were very curious going into this game, and we kind of got an idea.
Yeah, and the one question mark with that group is Joseph Lewis. Jody did not dress for the game, so.
I was surprised by that.
Don't know. We don't have a real reason on that. Was he practicing yesterday?
I did not notice him not practicing. How about that?
Okay, so he was either not at practice or he did not practice. I mean, or he was a full.
Yesterday was a little weird because Chuma came back and was practicing, and I was like, yeah, he's practicing. I didn't realize, like, you should make note that he's practicing. I don't know. There's just so many injuries.
And Josh Fatu wasn't there. They found out
I
later.
I did notice that. Yeah. So give me credit, man. I'm just kidding.
Daniel Moribebe was running with the ones. You know, some different things to practice yesterday. It was a full blown day, and I had to work.
Mm-hmm. Womp, womp.
So also on stock down, I got Kenny Bigelow. That, you know, we finally found out this week that Kenny Bigelow is transitioning to the coaching side. So his playing days apparently are done. But as I pointed out earlier, Joe Williams retired for like four games last year, the running back from Utah. So never say never. Isn't that what the James Bond movie is?
I'm thinking of the Justin Bieber song, which is kind of horrible. But do you, because someone asked Helton if it's permanent, and he said at this point it is, which does not mean that that's permanent. If you're saying at this point it is, couldn't that mean that?
That means they think it is, and they'll change their mind later if need be.
But do you think it could there be a possibility between telling Kenny Bigelow go suit up and Jay Tufele we're burning your red shirt? What do you think is more likely?
Oh, that's a tough one. That's a toss up. I don't know that Jay Tufele is ready yet. I mean,
he worth noting that he was getting significant reps in practice yesterday.
And since I wasn't there, I couldn't really judge those reps. But, you know, I would say Kenny Bigelow returning is more likely than Jay Tufele burning his red shirt. That would be my guess. What's your guess?
I don't know. So I guess because Kenny's a senior, you want him to make the trip. Yes? And you still want Jay to make the trip? Yes?
I think you have to take Jay Tufele.
Yeah.
If Kenny Bigelow doesn't go, you for sure have to take Jay Tufele just in case there's an injury to, you know, Brandon Peely, your nose tackle. And if we're assuming that Josh Fatu cannot travel.
Curveball, more likely burning Jay Tufele's red shirt or having Jacob Daniel come back to the D-line?
Burning Jay Tufele's red shirt.
Interesting.
But Jacob Daniel would be, if you're going to make a switch, that's the guy.
Yeah. I had stalked down on Eugene Nwosu, which, granted, he is arguably the MVP of the season, maybe, on the defense. So how much his stock is impacted by this. But I thought he had some offsides that were just bad and critical drives, like extended plays, you know. So I that was a little off. I mean, it was a quieter game for him, but he set the expectation of the bar so high that whether it's quieter or just a normal game for him, who knows.
Uchenna Nwosu hasn't made a ton of plays recently. I don't think people have really noted, you know, since he got hurt and hurt his knee against Texas.
That's a great point.
He hasn't made a ton of plays. Now, granted, he's still been really good. I think I heard a broadcaster say that was a defensive lineman. He's like, the really good pass rushers, if you're not getting one offside a game, you know, then you kind of live with one offside a game. But that's if you're getting to the quarterback, which is something he hasn't done recently.
He was close-ish on plays, but close don't add up.
Yeah, so he has a ton of hurries now. I think he's leading the Pac-12 in hurries. I think USC tweeted out, but he's got 1.5 sacks on the season. He had a half sack against Washington State. He hasn't had a sack. The only other sack he had was against Stanford. So that's a long time ago, basically. And he's had 3 or 4 tackles per game. You know, most games since the Texas game since he was injured. You know, granted he's made some incredible plays. That interception against Washington State.
Yes.
DeKal, you know, receiving the Josh Fatu tip and, you know, almost taking it in. But he's been quieter since he was at the very beginning of the season where he was just all over the place and looked like a true All-American those first couple games. We just haven't seen him make a ton of plays recently. So I could definitely agree with the stock down there.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
That's it for me.
Let's go to Herta on the sidelines. Now, how much of this is going to be me considering you were not on the sidelines?
I was not on the sidelines. I was in Georgia attending a childhood friend's wedding and I had a great time.
And you had a day off.
I had a day, yes, it was the first day I broke my streak. It was like 76 days straight that I'd been working.
And he really means it. He's not exaggerating.
Yeah, something
crazy
like that.
Workaholic.
I had the last day off I had previously was July.
July.
But I had fun in July. I went on a couple trips, you know. So knew the work season was coming, so got ready for it. But my hurting on the sidelines is because I was at a wedding, I sent a tweet before the game, said, make sure you follow Keely. She's going to be on the sidelines. And yet still, I believe I had my phone in my jacket pocket. I was dancing on the dance floor. And like I just keep feeling vibrations against my chest. I'm like, what is going on?
It was the rhythm of the music.
Besides the rhythm of the music. You know, I'm like swag surfing. And then all of a sudden, like I look at my phone. I'm like, oh, my phone is blowing up with Twitter mentions. I guess people didn't decide to look back earlier
Basically,
in the game.
This is a subtle flex that people really rely on you for your game
No,
tweets.
No. People really like to complain to me during the games because it was just all complaints. I'm like, well, I already told you guys earlier, I'm not going to be answering any of these. And I just kept on referencing the same tweet over.
Which apparently you showed up in my mentions.
So you got all those. I just passed them along to you, you know?
Thanks. I appreciate it.
That was my only hurt on the sidelines because, you know, I watched a little bit of the game, the fourth quarter, probably the last 10 minutes after the wedding, at the after party. In a cabin. We only had a TV.
Hey, that's fun.
Yeah, so turn that game on and watch a little bit of it while still hanging out. But, you know, I wasn't paying that much attention. Watched the game a couple days later and did all my studying on it. Well, what do you have heard on the sidelines? Because I'm sure you have a couple because you had to make up for me not being there.
Yeah, I have some. Yeah, someone tweeted me, come on, Keely, you got to be both you and Shotgun. I'm like, there's a reason why I can't do that. It was kind of funny. So after Now, you need to look this up for reference. Did you watch Sam's presser after the game? Not presser, his scrum after the game.
I did not.
So Ryan posted it. Go look at it. So Kyle Bonagura of ESPN asks, Sam, did the implications of this game, the big picture, did it ever slip into your mind? And Sam goes, yeah, sometimes it does. And then you see his face. Sam has the worst poker face ever. So he says that, he has a face that says, shoot, I'm going to have to answer for why I just said that it did slip into my mind. So he goes, but I think I do a good job of not thinking about it during games. And then Kyle is good at like kind of pressing and goes, come on, Sam, did you think about it? And Sam just goes, no. And then cracks
a big smile.
And Kyle goes, you liar. But he like whispers it. And like I was standing to the right of Sam, so I could see Sam and Kyle, and no one could really else see this exchange. And Darnold's laughing, and Dan is trying to ask a question. Darnold can't even hear it because he's just trying to like compose himself, but he's laughing. So I thought that was really funny because we got a little honesty hour from Darnold about how the implications of the Utah game did slip into his mind.
Was a huge game for USC. I mean, that's Pac-12 South game. You know, that basically we talked about last week, that the Pac-12 South has kind of gone through USC or Utah the majority of the last few years. So, you know, it's a big game in that regard. And then also, you win and you stay in. Still in the national playoff picture right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this heard it on the sideline. So it's kind of becoming a thing now, apparently, that after home games, when Helton walks through the tunnel and he walks down on the Coliseum field to go out, it's usually when Dan and I are setting up for instant analysis. So Clay comes over, he kind of looks exhausted, and he goes, okay, let me guess, instant analysis, we suck. It was amazing. It was like a cynical, kind of tired, defeated Helton that was cracking a joke, and it was hilarious. And like, he's self-aware. Like, for everyone who's like beating him up about his coach talk, he's aware. He knows what's happening. You know, it was really funny just to see the human jokester side of Helton.
And if it would have been after the first half, you would have done a halftime Facebook Live like Ryan and I did during the Washington State game, that probably would have been the answer, because USC had turned the ball over way too much. You know, they'd gained a bunch of yards in the first half. I think it was like 270 or so. And the defense was giving up chunks of yardage, were not tackling. And then you flip the script. And you think, wait a second, this could be the USC team that we all kind of expected at the beginning of the season. They tackled well the second half. They made plays. The offense, you know, drove the ball, those three really long drives, take the lead. And the defense makes the big play at the end that you need to make. You know, they gave up the touchdown. They had the 4th-and-1. Really, can we check on the Pac-12 spotting? Somehow that – I don't know how that Utah didn't get a first down. They had to go for it on 4th-and-1. They had the weird subbing in.
Yeah, that whole series was so weird.
Yeah.
I also don't know why Utah snapped the ball and like why they went so fast. Because I feel like if they would have just delayed it a little bit, they would have reviewed it.
Oh, the delay of game call?
No, not that
oh,
one.
Oh, the
spotting.
Yeah, it was interesting there. Also, I didn't necessarily hear that on sidelines, but watching the TV replay of Kyle Whittingham, he tries to say after that play where they're called, you know, they sub in and USC subs, and USC takes forever running a defensive player on and off, and they get the delay of game while the referee's trying to pump the clock up to push the play clock back to 25.
It was so weird.
Which made no sense. But then Whittingham's trying to tell the referee on the sideline, the side judge, he's like, we didn't sub. So I went back a couple times and looked at it, and I was like, look at the personnel. They subbed like three players in. So he's like, we didn't do it. He's like, no, we didn't. He's like, yes, you did. You did that one.
That competitive lie. Just a little white lie. Also, I heard it in my mentions. We actually got a Family Feud in my mentions. I thought it was pretty funny.
That sounds a bit meta.
It is. Someone tweeted me like something about what we talked about in the podcast. And then someone replied to him, kind of called him dumb, and then was like, you made this bad point. And then the guy replied, evidently, you don't listen to the Family Feud podcast. Try it out, and my comment is relevant. So, Von Blaze, shout out to you for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. And, you know, if someone tries to come at you, you can always shout us out like that. We appreciate it.
Okay, my last one. On Tuesday, USC not only pumped in crowd noise, they pumped in, I'm shipping up to Boston, which I low-key love that song. It gets me hype. But I hadn't heard it since the last time I was in Notre Dame, and it was that weird Inception moment where you hear something that you, like, haven't heard since you were in the exact moment, and I was like, phew, like, back into... that's my Inception noise. I was immediately... He's face-palming right now. I was, like, immediately transported back into Notre Dame Stadium, and I was just like, this is crazy. A lot has changed since the last time I heard this song.
I don't know the Inception sound. I haven't seen that movie.
Oh, okay.
But
once again, if anyone knows this movie reference that I'm making that Shotgun's just completely not into right now.
Sorry, I watch sports.
Okay, you can be a well-rounded person.
Yeah, I watch sports and other sports.
Okay.
I watch hockey and basketball, baseball, football.
Oh my goodness.
Even some Australian rules football. If it's on, like, when I grew up, you know, ESPN used to show on the East Coast, they would show stuff at like 3 a.m. There'd be like Aussie rules football. Like, I could never figure out the rules, but I was always watching it. I'm like, this is weird. Someone needs to teach me the rules of this. Watch rugby all the time. Whatever's on. Cricket.
Wow. Little Shotgun.
I like competition.
Doing his thing.
So.
That's what I got.
That's what you got?
That's what I got.
So, avoiding your Inception noises. Let's move on to
that Keith. Wasn't even my best Inception impression, but we'll save that for another day.
The last time I can remember hearing that song is at Boston College, which was not a good day for USC or Steve Sarkisian.
Okay, that doesn't make sense. You were at the Notre Dame game.
Yeah, last time I remember hearing.
Oh, okay. Whatever.
I don't remember.
How do you not? They played it like 9 million times.
I was in the press box.
Oh.
I was too busy hearing, you know, all the Notre Dame people cheering before the game. You know, you're not supposed to cheer in the press box. Cheering before the game when Michigan
Shots
State
fired.
Beat Michigan, you know, when the John Baxter's special teams at Michigan, when the punter flubbed the snap.
Ooh.
And then tried to pick it up and kick it again, and that was not a good decision. He should have just fell on it and let the defense try to play.
I always tell the story. I was in the bathroom for that game in the press box. All of a sudden, I hear mad screaming, and then the press guy that always says, like, 2 yard gain, that guy, he goes, "There's no cheering in the press box, but oh my God." And I was like, what did I just miss? It was pretty epic.
Classic Keeley, missing it all.
Hey,
all
I right. got a story I get to tell.
Let's move it on to Keep It, Change It. You want to start or you want me to?
You got it.
All right, I'm going to say Keep It, the two tight end sets. They were really good. They didn't even use Daniel Amorebabe a ton in the two tight end sets. However, the two tight end sets as a whole, you know, averaged over 9 yards a play. They averaged over 10 yards on pass plays. You know, they were really good. There were several big gains in that. Part of that was Josh Follow when he was in there. Eric Cromanhook was in there some. I like that they were using all the tight ends. And, you know, when Daniel Amorebabe is back, he just causes the defense to pay that much more attention to you when you put him on the field.
Mm-hmm. I have less penalties. Keep that. They had a season low 3 penalties for 35 yards.
Interesting. So, I didn't think about that. That's a really good point.
Yeah. So
it's about time.
Do that. I mean, you take away the two Achena
offsides.
Offsides. You have one.
There are also probably two more that were declined.
Yes. So, granted, there's a exception to the rule, but I'm going to take it and run with it.
I said making plays for Sam. Keep that. I mean, the offense, the receivers caught several balls away from their body, some behind, you know, some on the sideline, some when they're about to get drilled. You know, I thought the receivers, you know, this is the best game they've had by far. You know, there weren't a ton of explosive plays for the receivers themselves. You know, you had tight end Tyler Petit with a 52-yard gain. But, you know, they were able to catch everything, keep drives going. And, you know, they did some things getting Deontay the ball in the slot and getting him some yards that way after he had been slowed down a couple games prior.
I have multiple things for Darnold, as in Darnold the improviser. I don't know how he can necessarily keep it, but keep that spirit. You saw, I feel like...
I feel like this should be a cheerleading. Keep that spirit up.
This podcast has it all. But that second Tyler Petit touchdown, when he just scrambles, how that DB did not pick up the ball. There's two in the area, but that one in front of Tyler, crazy. But that was vintage Darnold. That was Darnold just making defenses go like, what? How? So I thought that was pretty good. And I also think Darnold showing emotion. I think he showed a lot of it on the sideline, and I thought that was good. I think the offense needs a leader. I know that everyone says that Darnold's the quiet leader that leads guys, but I think showing that emotion really helps, especially in games like this. And the offense doesn't necessarily have a leader necessarily besides Darnold, and so Darnold taking up more of that role I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I think the difference maybe in this team and last year is you had some more on that offense in particular. You had some more braggadocious players. You had some more bravado on the team. You had Zach Banner, Juju, you know, even Darius Rogers. Those are guys that, you know, what you have on the defensive side with Jack Jones or even Uchenna Nwosu, very competitive, very spirited guys, will tell the other team, hey, we're better than you or whatever it is. On offense now, your best players, Sam Darnold is pretty quiet. Ronald Jones is pretty quiet. Tyler Vaughns is pretty quiet. You know, there's not, you know, that emotional leader, like you said. I think they need someone that you know, has that fire maybe to come off. And, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, Sam Darnold screaming at everybody, but, you know, him showing a little bit of emotion I think is good. I don't think he needs to be, you know, flatline all the time. I know that's his personality. I know that's what everybody wanted to talk about. Any of the, you know, scouting breakdowns, like, oh, look at him after this Rose Bowl catch. He's just looking for the sideline. You know, it's good to throw a fist pump every once in a while. Fist pumps are solid.
Yeah, but I also think that that's just him. I mean, like,
what I think is for him to show a little emotion is good. I don't think he needs to bottle it up. There's emotion there.
Yes.
Because he's shown some frustration at times at practice and stuff coming off the sideline.
Yeah.
There's some emotion there, and he just doesn't show it. I think he should show a little bit more. I don't think it's a bad thing for him to show a little bit.
Agreed.
That's all I got for keep it.
Really? I said feeling it out. I feel like T did a better job of feeling what but there's also like a second part of this and changes.
Go for it.
He did a better job at feeling out what the defense was giving him and also what was working. I thought going up tempo a little bit and just giving Rojo the ball worked, but then also slowing it down a little bit. That's why the tempo thing, I have mixed feelings about how, because I kept clamoring for them to go up tempo during the game, but then it ended up working out with their long drive. So I don't know necessarily how I feel about it. I was going to pick your brain about that, but I don't know.
The thing is, like, people wanted to complain about the offense. The offense was moving the ball in the first half. I mean, a 17-yard gain, a 21-yard gain on the first drive, a 19-yard gain on the second drive. I mean, they got multiple first downs on both of those drives. The third drive is when they fumble the ball initially. But then the next drive, 21-yard gain to get a first down. Then Tyler Petit, 52-yard touchdown. That's all in the first quarter. So that's, you know, if you want to say a 15-yard gain, it doesn't have to be explosive play, but it's a chunk play, kind of. Then, what is that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the first quarter. So they're making some good yardage and stuff, and they were driving the ball a little bit, getting some first downs in each of those drives when they didn't turn the ball over.
Yeah, I guess it just felt like sometimes in games prior that they were forcing plays that I feel like didn't really work or didn't fit the personnel that was on the field. And I felt like that wasn't the case in this game. So keep that.
Okay.
Change it. What do you got?
You want a couple yours?
In that same vein, being like assessing what you're doing and what the defense is giving you, based solely, now remember how the offense is playing on the first half, not in the second half. Based on how they're playing, why not take the 3 points at the end of the, towards the end of the half, in the first half? They turned over on downs. I know you're going to go for it on fourth down, yada, yada, yada. But I just think in that instance, in what you knew on the offense, taking those 3 points was...
Well, it's not like it was a chip shot.
That's a great point. Yeah, I know.
I mean, they were on 33, so that's...
I know, but still...
That's a 50-yarder, basically.
Okay.
49 to 50-yarder, depending on where you set up for the hold.
But I want to be stubborn.
Do you think that Chase McGrath has that leg? That's part of the question.
We've seen him make that in practice.
Okay, so then do you want to go for it? And also, it's 21-7. You know, you're trying to get that momentum going into half. I think instead
of... At the same time, you didn't when you didn't convert on the fourth down. You know what I'm saying?
True, but I think you risk it. And I didn't really like the play call on that. I didn't think Sam made the best decision. It was a smash route on the outside.
Yeah.
He threw it over Deontay. You know, he didn't even really give Deontay Burnett a chance on that one. I think on fourth down, that's one of the times when you throw it. If they intercept it, whatever. You throw it into a tight window and try to make something happen.
Which then begs the question, how much of this is let's fire T versus just execute better?
There's all execute. If you execute every play, then it doesn't matter who the offensive coordinator is.
Exactly.
I mean, every play can be designed to beat. Very rarely is the defense perfectly drawn up to beat you. Usually it's a beat of some type. I change it. Obviously, the turnovers. The turnovers. Woo!
Yeah, I got that.
I don't even know what sound effect to make for the turnovers. They were just bad. The fumbles, too, where did they come off of? Both off read options. So that was my other change, running the read option correctly. So
practicing it so that Sam is more comfortable with it.
Maybe that's what you need to do, but they need to run it correctly regardless of what it is. Because the first one, he tried to take it out from Ronald Jones, And then once you pull the ball as a quarterback, you cannot try to put it back in. That don't work. Once you pull, you have to keep it. And if you have to bite the bullet and take a 3-yard loss because you read it incorrectly and you just need to fall down, you do that.
But we know that that's not Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold will tooth and claw his way out of taking a loss.
True, but you take the loss, not try to give it to the running back.
Yeah, obviously, yes.
And then the second one, he just never had a good handle on the ball after he pulled it out. The defender did a nice job of raking down on his arms as well, and he was kind of bobbling the ball and just kind of throws it. It basically was like he threw it up in the air. It was like a movie play, kind of. You know, in the movie, like somebody fumbles and it goes up in the air and somebody comes out of nowhere to catch it.
And slow motion is like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, while You Can Be My Hero plays in Varsity Blues or whatever it is.
So you do watch movies, sports movies, but still.
There you go.
I
don't want your life.
I've actually never seen that movie before.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. You want me to watch Inception and you haven't seen Varsity Blues and Johnny Moxon?
Inception is like a classic.
What do you think Varsity Blues is?
Critically acclaimed. Don't come at me with that.
Are you kidding? Bud Kilmer and Johnny Moxon going back and forth? Oh, come on.
You do realize that this is going over my head.
And a whipped cream bikini? I mean, there's everything you want in a teenage movie.
Well, okay. Burning 2 timeouts in the third quarter with 6 minutes left. Change that.
That's not on the coach. That's not on Clay Helton, I don't think. That's on your offensive coordinators and your grouping, because the first time they called the timeout, they had 12 men on the field. Deontay Burnett made a play, and then they brought in 2 tight ends, and Deontay Burnett was still out there, so Deontay Burnett should have been off the field. They were going to get, because they didn't huddle up, they were probably going to get called for a 12 men on the field, potentially. So that was why that timeout was called. The second one, I don't know if it's the T. Martin said on the broadcast, or they said on the broadcast that T. Martin had told them that sometimes he waits until 15 seconds is left before he calls in the play to kind of slow the game down, slow the tempo. And on this play in particular, the play clock was about to expire, and Clay Helton called the timeout. So I don't think those timeouts are on Clay Helton as much as everybody wants to blame him for it. Now, if you want to blame the offensive coordinator and his assistant, Tyson, then maybe that's who you blame. Or maybe even the people pushing guys in onto the field on that know the packages. Like, all right, this is the guy that comes in, this guy goes out. You know, that assistant coach on the sideline, that's who you blame, not Clay Helton.
Mm-hmm. There should be like a montage of every week. I feel like I say this. Do you want to guess? A JNAF punt return. Once again, great guy, great kid. Think he's doing well at nickel. Just think that there's other options. At least try other options. Why not?
I think he's just got to catch the ball. I mean, he's got to go, you know, I think Ryan said that he felt that he was too far away to go get a ball. And that is part of the game now with the rugby punch. You kick the ball away from the punt returner, and you try to find an area of the field where they're not. And maybe USC needs to put 2 returners back there, like was it Oregon State did that against USC and was able to get a good return off of it. So that he knows he has one side he has to take care of, the other guy takes care of the other side, whichever side it comes to, then you go get it. Maybe that's a wrinkle that USC needs to try. But, yeah, I would like to see something different, or even coming after some punts. You know, I would like to see some heavy punt block action and see if they
can get had one. Opportunities against Utah. At least it looked like it. So
it looked like Levi Jones was pretty close to one. Yeah. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing them go after one.
Mm-hmm. You got anything else?
That's it.
Now I get to pick your brain. Actually, no, we got a fan question. Dear Keely and Shotgun, I have a question that might cause a feud, so maybe it's something you can help to answer. Who on the USC staff decides the uniform choices for a game, for instance? What color socks are worn during the game? We haven't seen the chrome helmets yet this year or any other uniform variation, so I thought we were past all that meaningless stuff. But I suppose it does have meaning because I had a terrible, visceral reaction to the sight of Cam Smith wearing black knee-high socks with the Cardinal golden uniform. USC's uniform is supposed to be black shoes, white socks, and no names on the jerseys. On the jersey. Is nothing sacred anymore? Or am I just being a curmudgeon? Thanks for keeping us informed and entertained. Fight on, beat the Irish. John from Brea, California.
Except you didn't read it right. You go, is nothing sacred anymore?
Oh, that's good. There you go.
Or am I just being a curmudgeon? I would go with the latter.
Well, fun
if
fact.
If you had a visceral reaction to black, the black socks. Oh my God, that's the black socks. Nah, come on. Is nothing sacred? USC's uniform has changed a lot over the years. I don't know if you guys, you know, go back to the 1800s, but the uniform's not exactly the same. You can credit Pete Carroll for bringing back the shoulder stripes, I think it was, and, you know, bringing it back to what was, you know, I believe the 60s or 70s uniform, but the helmet logo has changed previously. There's been different things. It's not like it's Penn State's uniform or even Alabama's uniform where there have pretty much been no changes at all because the uniforms are so plain in one part. So the difference in socks, I don't understand why people get so upset with the socks. I don't even notice the socks. That's never something that I notice. Like, oh my, that's black. That's different. Now, if somebody was wearing like some shiny or sparkly socks, maybe then I would notice. But
I'd be down for that. No, the black socks didn't bother me as much as the black undershirts. That just didn't look good against the thing. But
and that's something that players have done. I mean, dating back to when I first started covering, I remember. I think T.J. McDonald always wore an undershirt and usually wore a black one. So, I mean, if you want to, I mean, that seems more prevalent to me than the socks. I just don't understand people getting upset at the socks. I mean, Dan does the same thing. He points it out, and then people on the message board will jump all over it. And it's just not something that I think is a big deal, in my opinion.
Well, good news for you, John. They will be not wearing the black socks again this season. I got word from USC's equipment manager. He also hates the black socks. So they're not doing it. He didn't choose the black socks. And Dan Weber suggested that they have a bonfire on Thursday night and burn the black socks.
So what happens if a player just wears black socks?
The equipment managers put everything in their locker. So,
yes.
So they contraband white socks into there, like, or black socks into the...
When I played, I had certain socks that I felt more comfortable in. You know, there was certain...
I had a lucky shirt.
Like, I wore soccer socks instead of baseball socks a lot of times because there was more padding on the bottom of them to
Weird.
Me. So, you know, there's not a huge difference in them. And then, you know, I wore my socks up, so that was part of it. So, it depends. Like, in baseball, a lot of times teams will... And it all goes back to the head coach. Head coach decides all this. That's who is the actual... Steve Sarkisian was the one... That made the final choice on the chrome helmets.
And worth noting that USC, last time they were in Notre Dame, had the chrome helmets. So,
it's true.
The shiny.
They looked really good
in
pictures.
They did.
Especially because Notre Dame's field is just so well lit.
Mm-hmm.
So give them a lot of credit for, you know, the renovations.
It makes it extra, like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It feels big time. Because everything felt
something.
Like it was sparkling a little bit.
Yeah.
With how good the lights are there. So I'm really looking forward to being back there taking
Me
photos
too.
This time. But it comes back to the head coach in that regard. I know in baseball, you know, I've talked
starting
to a bunch
pitcher.
Of the baseball coaches. It depends on, you know, they will give the option to the starting pitchers. Some coaches don't care. Anybody, you can wear your socks up, you can wear your socks down, they don't care. Some of them want uniform across the team, so then it goes on to the starting pitcher. Sometimes the starting pitcher gets to pick the uniform that they play in. And then sometimes they're like, all right, we need to, like USC in the NCAA tournament, in the last time they were in regional in, 2014 or 15, they wore their practice BP jerseys. The reason why they did it is because it was blistering hot in Lake Elsinore, and they wanted the lightest jersey possible because they were sweating so much instead of wearing their normal, thicker jerseys. So, you know, sometimes the weather plays into it, sometimes other things, but inevitably it comes down to the head coach. So that's who you can blame. Now, if someone contraband brings some socks in, I don't know. I mean, maybe they get some extra punishment or something after practice.
Who knows? For those of you keeping score at home, that's 3 baseball references by Shotgun in this podcast. So, yeah, there was. I was keeping track.
Well, John Baxter gives like 42 in a single interview, so I think I'm low.
Is that an accurate count?
I think so. It's all about hitting the pitch. Got to get a pitch to hit every punt return. That's why they haven't returned a bunch of punts, according to John Baxter.
Okay, picking your brain. How concerned should USC fans be about USC's defense facing a real dual threat for the first time with depleted D-line depth, and how do you think Clancy combats that?
I think a very important player this game is John Houston, because if you need to spy potentially, I think John Houston's a guy you do instead of Cameron Smith. Now, John Houston has to make tackles, but John Houston is very good sideline to sideline. That's his strength. If you need him to spy and potentially do that, I think he's a guy that is fully capable of, you know, keeping a dual threat quarterback contained. You may do some different things where you run some QB contained pass rushes where you rush up the field, but you don't get too deep on apparently Ryan Abrahams.
Our faithful listener, Ryan Abraham, is getting bored and watching videos in the corner.
Yeah, after playing video games and stuff. Apparently our show's not good enough for him. I guess that's what it is. But you may do some pass rushes where there's QB contained type of pass rushes where you don't go too deep. You know, you may beat the tackle around the end, but you don't continue your pass rush and loop around and give them, you know, kind of that edge. So you may see some different things in the pass rush there. You can also blitz different players, you know, to try to keep the quarterback inside if that's what you're trying to do, or to try to force him. One of the things they did against Troy Williams, they blitzed a lot from his right side. So naturally, a right-handed quarterback wants to roll to his right. They saw that Troy Williams is not as good when he's rolling to his left, so they blitzed from his right side and forced him, if he was going to get out of the pocket, to go to the left. So that's something that they did a little bit different there. Maybe they do something with that with Wimbush. It depends on the film study there. Like I said, I haven't really got the chance to study him too much with a short week, but I think that is a distinct concern for them, so because it's something that they haven't seen too much this year.
How much is a concern for the environment? A lot of these guys are younger. They haven't necessarily played at Notre Dame before it made the trip. Darnold hasn't, Telly Vaughns, DeAndre Burnett. How much does that at all... It's an interesting environment. How much of that plays into anything like that?
Well, we should all be concerned about our environment. Climate change is real. And the fact that it's going to be, what, 70-something degrees?
Yeah, I'm actually very excited about that.
I'm excited about that part, not the, you know, the polar ice caps melting and all. We'll skip that part. You know, I think this is going to be much worse than Washington State. Maybe not as many profanities. Maybe.
Who knows? I don't know. But, yeah, Josh Fallows said that the coaches are telling them, like, be ready. Wazoo's going to look like a JV team compared. Not
JV crowd.
JV crowd, yes, thank you. Let's just upset them even more. Wazoo's crowd is going to look like a JV crowd compared to what Notre Dame is going
to
be like.
Now, you could call Washington State a JV team on Friday, when they lost 37-3 to Cal.
I would like to say no comment about Wazoo.
Wow, I don't know how they lost like that. I didn't get to see that game, and I was just stunned when seeing the score. Notre Dame is going to have a packed house. It's a much bigger stadium than Washington State. So, yes, as far as in terms of the atmosphere, I think, you know, adding probably, what, 50,000, 70,000 more thousand people than the Washington State crowd will have definitely a big difference. That they built the stadium pretty, it's designed well, so the sound reverberates back and forth. I think it's going to be really loud. It should be really fun. And like I said, this is the type of stuff you live for as a player, as a coach. You know, it's going to be under the lights. It's going to be, like I said, it's going to be sparkling. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
I got to look my best on the sideline. I got to figure out what I'm going to wear.
Interesting.
I got to sparkle.
So you're going to be on the sideline for this game?
Yeah.
Oh. There we go.
How else am I going to do hurdles on the sidelines?
Well, you did it this week. So.
Twitter mentions.
How much of Rojo's success running the ball late in the game was the O-line doing better, but the O-line doing better because the defense was gassed?
I think the O-line was better. I think it doesn't hurt when the defense is gassed. And when you have those long drives, you know, that contributes to that. I thought Rojo also broke a couple tackles, which sometimes you say, oh, if they're missing tackles late, then that's because they're tired. I think all those things combine together in that regard. That's all I got on it.
Oh, okay.
Nice and simple.
Any final thoughts? Because that's all I got.
I think this USC has a great opportunity to build on the momentum from that second half. And if they do, the Pac-12 should be scared, and the rest of the country should be looking forward to seeing USC in a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
If. Big if.
That's
but
a big if.
Big Sam Darnold playing more confident. That's a huge if. I mean, that's a huge potential contributor to them playing much better. And I think you saw that after that game. You know, the fact that he could smile, you know, answering some of those questions following the game. And like you said, then, yep. You know, I think that's a big thing for him. You know, maybe that the pressure, you know, that sophomore, since it's his second year, the sophomore slump pressure, maybe the weight comes off him a little bit. Doesn't feel like he has to do everything. Doesn't have to be perfect because his receivers show that they can make some plays for him. And Ronald Jones is going to be really good. Get Stephen Carr back either this week or next week, potentially getting Porter Gustin back. You get Josh Fatu back, you know, in a week or two. You know, a lot of things, if they can stay healthy. They've two games in a row, they've been really healthy coming out of the game. So, knock on everything. Knock on that turtle shell.
The wooden turtle. Fun fact, thing to watch out for. Rojo got a little over 100 yards against Utah. If he gets 100 more yards, he'll be 10th on all-time rushing for USC.
And he has a ridiculous streak of touchdowns, I think 13 or 14. You know, so he keeps finding the end zone, and when he finds the end zone, that's only going to help USC.
I think so.
I think that's
so.
A positive.
Do you want to have a game prediction, or are you peacing out?
I'm peacing out.
Okay. Thanks for listening. We will see you next week.